Yes, guys, what's good? You're tuned into Mango Masala, Pi Radio South Asian show. My name's Gerns and I am here with Halima.
Hi, everyone.
And yeah, we're here back. You know what? My brain actually isn't working because
Why?
I had my work Christmas party.
Oh, everyone's had it this week.
I know. Honestly, like Thursday and Friday.
Literally everyone.
It was so busy, like, because I was in Birmingham for it.
Yeah.
And town was so busy. And then I stayed over and then left on the Friday. And even the Friday evening, saw so many, like, people out in their sparkly dresses and stuff. And I was like, it's clear what's going on now. But yeah.
How was it?
It was really good. I had a really good time.
Did you get super drunk?
I can't possibly comment.
Did the dance moves come out, Carlos?
Again, I can't possibly comment, but I neither confirm nor deny. But
we need to, at some point on this show, like, make some kind of video with your dancing, because I feel like the audience have gotten, like, snippets of it from other videos, but, like, we need... People who don't actually... If they don't know, they don't actually know.
No.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, well, if you know, you know.
A lot of people on Thursday were like, okay, I wasn't expecting that.
Swear down.
Yeah.
So funny.
Like, because obviously, because I stayed over, then went into work the day afterwards, and everyone was like, well, you were a vibe-less. And I was like, yeah.
Oh, God's sake, Carlos.
But, yeah, it was really good fun, but as a result, I'm still recovering, not even in terms of, like, feeling hungover or anything, but I think I was more just exhausted because I obviously had the Christmas party, and that was a really good time, was partying till late, then I had to go into work quite early the next day to do some stuff as well, so I literally had, like, 4 hours sleep, then was in work pretty much the whole day, then drove back, and I did actually have to, like, I made the, what's it called, responsible decision.
To pull over.
I was like, you know what, actually, I can't, like, it's not safe for me to be
really?
Driving. So I literally pulled over at a service station and rested for a couple of hours and then continued.
For a couple of hours?
Yeah. Because,
what do you mean, like, slept in your car?
Yeah, just because...
That's good.
Yeah,
that's great. That's
exactly.
What everyone should
because,
do.
No,
but...
could, you know when you could feel, I was literally like, it actually isn't right for me to continue driving. Like, I
need
to stop.
To be fair, that's probably a few times where I should have made that decision.
Nah, but because I've had it before, because obviously driving an hour and a half to and from work, obviously there's times, particularly in the morning, where I'm like a bit tired, but I'm able to just kind of, you know, have a sip.
Put the window down a bit,
have a
blast
sip of
music.
My coffee. Like, I like singing along, that helps me.
Yeah, I do that as well.
But this was different.
No,
like,
sometimes you just can't.
I was like, yeah, no. But yeah, I think I'm just a bit achy and a bit tired, and you know, and I've also, like, I've just got a load of other ailments at the moment. Like, I've got a blister on my, you know, when, like, little things just keep my, I've got a blister.
Oh, when it rains, it pours,
exactly,
and it's all the little things, but
because I
was
like, walking around loads on Thursday, and my blister is not any better for that, and it's just like, yeah, basically, I'm feeling very fragile.
Sorry
right
to
now.
Hear about your blister,
I'm very fragile, but I'm here, yeah,
you're here. You made it, public service.
And literally all I can do when I'm talking about my blisters and stuff, whenever I'm talking to women about it or people who have periods, I'm just like,
I was literally just about to say, like, I've had a super, super tired week, but it is because I've just been on my period this week. Like, I've, and I'm super anemic. Sometimes I forget. And do you know how I know, like, I'm at a really, like, awful level of anemia, let's say, is that I've actually been fairly regularly taking my iron tablets.
I saw your tweet about
and
this,
I'm still like not all right.
Sam,
thoughts and prayers.
Complaining while continuing the complaining train. The second you, like, walked into the room, what's the first thing I hear?
Ah.
What?
I screamed because I hurt my thumb.
Well, no, I'm sorry. Like, sorry, put aside the complaining. Halima has actually made some of the famous Dubai pistachio chocolate.
I did.
So great for that, but that's not what she was talking about. The second thing that you said when you walked in was about how you smell.
Oh my God, guys. If you're a desi person, like, you are... So I keep, like, three spray perfumes and, like, a roll-on oud in my car. Because if I go into my sister's chat... Okay, if you're... I'm not completing any sentences here, am I? If you're a desi person, you will know the ailment of just your mum cooking all the time and just stinking of curry. If I go in my sister's chat now and I type in the word stink, I bet you... It's like, the conversation is literally like, I'm going to ban your mum from... I'm going to go on it now.
I love how you and your sister.
She wants the house to.
Mom.
She wants the house to stink. The house stinks. The whole house stinks of curry.
So at least once a month, basically, like, not more. For goodness, Brian, that's.
There's one comment I'm not gonna.
Particularly vulgar.
No, tell her I don't like cooking near her because it stinks. It's annoying, man. Every day stink of curry. I came home with a house stinks of curry. I'm so fed up.
The thing is, like, I don't know if it's because, like, obviously, I didn't grow up with a South Asian matriarch.
Yeah, yeah.
But I really like it when it smells of curry. Like, I think.
Carlos, look what my sister said this morning. Like, why does your mum's cooking stink, man? It literally sticks onto your clothes. I can't even do this anymore. She's like, it's not. I've come to your house before, and you and Mayanka have both said, Halima, like, we could smell you. And the crazy thing, guess what? I didn't even go into the kitchen. Look at this conversation with my sister. I told her, can you get the chocolates out and can you leave them on the windowsill in the big room so that I don't have to go into the kitchen because they were in the fridge.
Okay.
So I don't have to go into the kitchen. I literally did it so that I was downstairs. I'm not joking, for 4 seconds. And then I was driving and I was thinking about the people who are driving past me. I'm driving with one wheel on the steering wheel and one hand just like doing this like aggressively. Oh, it's just awful.
But it doesn't smell bad. That's my point. Like, it's not like...
Yeah, but you don't want to smell of it.
Yeah,
I don't think you understand. Yeah. Like, maybe because you're not used to... And this is coming from someone who loves curry. Like, I love curry. But I don't... Carlos, it might...
I suppose it's like you don't have the choice.
Oh, my God. And you don't want to... You don't want to smell of curry.
You don't want to admit it. Like,
you don't want to... Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, look at me. I look good. Like, I'm dressed up. My makeup is did. My hair is did. I got nice clothes on. And I stink of... Oh, I don't smell that bad right now, but, like...
To be fair, I think I'm thinking more of, like, when you're walking in, the house smells a bit rather than actual people smelling.
Oh, when you're walking in the house and you're hungry, fine. No, but do you know what? Sometimes it's too much. Like, why am I waking up in the morning? Literally, look at what I texted my sister. I literally had to I wake up, it wakes me up in the morning. It literally woke me up, the smell.
Can I say wakes up in the morning, 12:34.
That's my morning, guys. That's my morning. But my point is that, like, it's like, sometimes she starts at like 9, 10 a.m. And it's like, why?
Respect the hustle.
And by the way, so I don't eat for like the first 5 hours after I wake up, right? Like, I can't eat because I get super nauseous.
Yeah.
So even the smell of food makes me really nauseous. And it's like the most pungent food, like curry. And it's waking me up at 9, 10 a.m. In the summer when my windows are open because the kitchen is below me, forget it. Forget it.
Well, do you think that this...
It's too much.
Well... Because I was just thinking, when you said that as well, I was thinking that one of the most, like...
Stereotypes.
Yeah,
I know.
Particularly being online, I'd say this year is,
I know it smells crazy in there. Yes.
I'm like, is there actually any kind of, like, you know what, fair enough kind of thing? Not from the it smells like bad, but like also from the sense of like...
There
is a reason why this has come about.
All the time. I remember when I used to... when I was at uni, and before I drove, so like I would take the train back and forth from uni, and like obviously when I'd go home, my mum would give me like two massive bags full of like 20 containers of curry, and I would sit on the train and like you could smell it on the train, right? And I would genuinely sit there and think to myself, like, I bet you a handful of these people in this carriage are gonna go home and join the EDL, like they're gonna go sign up to the EDL or something, because this is too much, man. It's too much. Sometimes coming from, and I, by the way, my mum is like, she is a chronic, like she is just cooking 24/7. Like if you walk into my house at any given point of any given day, there will be minimum 5 different curries, minimum.
Like, does it actually all end up getting eaten?
Yeah, well, it's all my mum and daddy. They eat curry like 3 times a day, so yeah, it does. And obviously, people are always in and out of my house. Like, people come and eat at my house. Like,
I'm hungry now.
No, I'm starving, but no.
Well, on the topic of EDL leaning topics, Mohammed has officially become the biggest male baby name in the UK. It's overtaken Noah. Well done, everyone.
A round of applause. Round of applause. Well done, guys. It's interesting to see the number of people like absolutely seething. But I don't think it's a comment on like any growing population of Muslims. I mean, okay, yeah, the population of Muslims is growing in the UK, but I think it's more that it is just like every Muslim man I know has the word like Muhammad in their name.
I think that, but also I think it's a comment on not the necessarily growth of more Muslim population, but more the declining birth rate amongst other demographics.
Yeah, so obviously,
then there's obviously going to be more people called right. Muhammad ultimately.
Exactly, because I think a lot of Muslim people do tend to come from cultures that, you know, are still traditionally kind of getting married and having children. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And we've spoken about this before.
Yeah, like the fertility rates.
We're on like a declining birth rate in fertility rate in the UK.
You said it. We said the demographic shift. I wonder what that's going to be, given that certain cultures are still continuing to have children and some aren't.
So
interesting. We really called it.
Hire us. But any EDL-leaning people, if you've got an issue, maybe you need to start popping them out yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Have your own kids.
Name them whatever you want. Oh, dear. But
I've got a flipping stress rash.
Well, what's caused that,
then? Oh, my God. Don't get me started. Let me just tell you one thing. I know you don't have a choice, but for those who believe in reincarnation, just pray that you don't get born as an older sibling in your next life. That's all I'll say if you want to ask me about my stress.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, exactly.
Are we going for 2, 3, or 4 in terms of who's caused this?
All of them.
Oh,
flipping
combined.
All of them. Oh. Gosh, all of them. And it's not their fault. They just spent the whole day flipping, driving my sisters back and forth from the hospital yesterday.
Hospital?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and I've got flipping that. I genuinely think it's causing me stress rash.
Yeah. Right, well, seeing as you said that, basically, today's episode, I've realised that it's all basically, like, Bad Vibes Island. It's all UK stuff, so
good times.
With that in mind, where has it gone?
Oh, we haven't played it in a while,
have we? I know,
here
we go. Oh, it doesn't want to play. 1 second.
Bad Vibes Island.
Oh yeah, the Christmas party, I was also singing a lot as well.
Whoever told you that you're technically hitting the notes? I just don't think it's true.
Right, well, you know what? New segment next week. We're going to do a perfect pitch test. You can do it now, we'll show you.
Pirate Radio Idol. All right, Vernon Mill Idol, I'm down.
Yeah, fist. I'm not taking lectures on karaoke from you.
Okay, fine.
Anyway, obviously you just mentioned hospital. On the topic of health, have you seen what's been going on with Diary of a CEO, Stephen Bartlett?
Oh, I saw someone tweet something about he's weird, but I didn't actually...
Well, that's personal opinions beside the point.
Yeah, no, I don't know what happened.
Do you know who he is, right?
Yeah.
So I think we mentioned a couple of controversial things that have gone on his podcast over the years. People might recognise him also as a dragon on Dragon's Den.
He's from Manchester, isn't he, or not? He's not?
I don't think he is.
Oh, okay.
I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure he's from the South. But basically... he obviously has his Diary of a CEO podcast, which started in 2017. Obviously, the initial focus was on business and entrepreneurship. They've had the likes of like massive names, like ranging from like the biggest business people to also like Molly May, which as I'm saying that, I realise she actually is a big business person.
Yeah,
so
is,
I shouldn't say like rich to Molly May, correct myself there. But yeah, I think we all know the clip, the whole 24 hours in a day that came from the podcast. So it's had a number of like kind of controversial quotes taken from it and discussed. The reason why he's trending at the moment though is because BBC have actually done an investigation into the podcast.
Oh, really? Why? Yeah. What's prompted that?
And they found that the podcast is, in their opinion, amplifying harmful health misinformation.
Oh.
So they did an analysis of a number of the podcast episodes, I think, over the past year. I think around like half of his content is basically focusing more on health stuff now rather than, say, purely business.
I've seen clips on TikTok like from dietitians and nutritionists talking about glucose and all of these things.
Which is kind of, it's an interesting shift for a business podcast.
But why is that problematic? Why is that wrong, what he's done?
So he's amplifying harmful health misinformation.
Oh, so, you'd think he'd do some due diligence. Like, how does that happen?
Well, so in an analysis of 15 health-related podcast episodes, BBC World Service found each contained an average of 14 harmful health claims that went against extensive scientific evidence. So such views that have been expressed on the podcast that haven't really received any kind of, like, correction or backlash or anything on his part have been: cancer can be treated by following a keto diet. Conditions such as PCOS and autism.
ADHD on
Like stuff like that can be reversed with diet. Also, like, a load of anti-vaccine conspiracies.
PCOS, that's the one that I saw. They were talking about glucose. You could reverse your PCOS symptoms by controlling your glucose. That's the one that I saw.
Which is scientifically incorrect. So in many of these, like, health-related episodes, the guests claim to know, like, a simple solution. Like we just said, like, oh, just eat this, don't eat that. And they believe that mainstream institutions are hiding this from the public, basically.
Oh, my God, it's like conspiracy theory territory.
However, also on the podcast, a lot of them would then advertise their own products that are with, like, wellness or with actually helping people with these conditions. And Bartlett himself has actually invested in various treatments, some of which have actually been featured or mentioned on the podcast. So it's all a bit like, what's actually going on here? Because
the crazy thing is that it's not just like slight misinformation. It's not just like, oh, obviously, because things with like medical information, medical consensus, there can be some kind of variation. Some doctors can believe different things. Some experts can believe different things. Yeah. But to average 14 different kind of nuggets of misinformation per episode, that's quite seismic. Like, that's not just like, oh, this is a second opinion or this is a differing opinion. That's like, we're just making things up as we go along. Like, that is very, that is a decisive aberration from, like, kind of medical consensus, you know? And that's kind of, it's crazy that he can put that out there as almost like just kind of factual information because of the nature and the size of his platform.
Exactly. On that topic of, like, the size of his platform, we obviously know that it's one of the highest ranked podcasts. It's certainly in the UK, if not the world, at this point. Yeah. Like, it's watched by millions or streamed by millions. It's on both, like, streaming platforms and YouTube visually as well. And he's estimated, he spoke to the Times in April of this year and said that from advertising alone, from advertising, he's estimated to make about 20 million this year.
Oh, that's from insane. The podcast. That is insane.
And I've heard as well, like, you know how, like, podcasts will have varying levels of, like, people working on it, and, like, most podcasts will have, like, maybe one or two people behind the scenes, like, doing something. He's got, like, a whole team, like, working on this podcast. Something. The fact that, like, as well, no one has actually been, like,
it's almost like a talk show, isn't it? Like, talk show kind of production.
Yeah.
But that's my point. Like, I think someone with that kind of level of influence, it's almost as though, like, they can pass off thing. Like, they can make fact. Do you know what I mean? Like, they can create facts, and the public will. And this is kind of, you know, the onus is leveled on the public here to kind of do their own due diligence and their own research and not to take Steve Bartlett's word for things. But also, like, people will listen to that because of his following and kind of the reputation that he's established for himself. And the thing that baffles me is that you can, as a non-medical professional, come forward and kind of, like, talk about these things with no requirement for medical, like, screening or, like, kind of, you know, information screening.
Well, yeah, I mean, the onus is completely on the podcast to do that, because whilst, like, TV and radio broadcasts are subject to Ofcom regulations...
So this is exactly what I was about to say, I guess, because that kind of format is a little bit more unregulated at the minute.
Well, literally, podcasts in the UK are not regulated by Ofcom, who would normally set rules on accuracy and impartiality. So he's actually not breaking any broadcasting rules by spreading misinformation.
So the investigation that they've done is just like a fact-finding investigation, not kind of like anything of consequence.
Well, yeah, because it's by the BBC, isn't it? So it's just like, which I suppose is, like, in our opinion, good on their part for actually, like, I say exposing, but more just like platforming the fact that this is ultimately misinformation rather than like anything else. And yeah, I think the company that is behind it, Flight Studio, they've Oh, it's owned by him as well. But they've said guests were offered freedom of expression and were thoroughly researched. But it's like, clearly or not, if the BBC can actually look through this, get medical experts and have them say, look,
that's my
like,
point.
This is,
yeah,
like,
it's not just about like a differing opinion. This is a genuine, like, actual aberration from established medical consensus, because it's not just like, oh, experts say this, but I believe this, or this might be a bit of inside information. It's like to average 14. Like, yeah, pieces of misinformation per episode. That's a lot.
And it's like all the thumbnails on the YouTube videos as well. You can see that it's all that very clickbaity. Like, oh, these foods are fueling cancer. Or, oh, this is basically the whole idea is like, this is what they're not telling you. I am here to provide, I'm here to expose this, that, the other, like.
You're right. I think medical information is something that needs to be kind of imparted, like, very kind of logically and kind of like clinically, do you know what I mean, like, without sensationalizing it, whereas I think that's what his podcast does. It sensationalizes like medical information, which already is kind of like, I think, antithetical to what medical information should be, which is honest, factual, clinical, like, without kind of biases and any kind of inflection, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose we'll see what comes from this, but I suppose at least it's, like, out there in a BBC article for people to go and read and see and...
Yeah, I think if anything, like, it should be a wake-up call to the public to be like, if you guys are taking information from online, like, make sure you double-check it yourself rather than just taking it and running with it. Because also, like, these aren't just misinformation. They could be harmful to people. Do you know what I mean? Like, they could actually, if someone's doing something believing that it's going to be helpful for them, like, it could actually end up not be like being the opposite. So you never know.
Do you envision that at any point in the future, maybe they would start clamping down on what people are saying and say, because during COVID, because during COVID, for example, on YouTube, we even had it ourselves. Like, when we did the whole, here at Pi Radio, we did like a bit of a vaccine debates,
free speech thing, yeah, we did.
Yeah, and the YouTube wouldn't let us upload that because obviously whilst we had on our side some quite accurate medical advice, yeah, we also had other people who
conspiracy
were like
conspiracy theorists, I wonder whatever happened to that.
Well, yeah, because we tried to upload it to YouTube, but it was like, we're not doing this because like it's promoting misinformation. So I wonder whether maybe they would start doing that with podcasts, because I think ultimately the way that consumption patterns are going, more people are maybe getting their news from places like social media and their other stuff. They're consuming more stuff on unregulated platforms rather than, say, watching TV or stuff
like
that.
You know what? It's such a difficult line to draw, because it's like, I do think that they should be, but then also like that's kind of hard to regulate, because the rate at which podcasts are coming out, like the volume of it is just huge. It's going to be so hard to regulate. It's going to cost so much money to do that. But also, it's like, if you start regulating like podcasts now that people are making in their homes and putting out like themselves on their own social media, where do you draw the line between that and like someone tweeting something?
Yeah, it's kind of like this whole like authoritarian, totalitarian state.
Kind of, like, and what we see of the British state, like, I could kind of see it devolving once again into like something perhaps a little bit restrictive and controlling. But that's why I think like, you know, community notes on Twitter, I think that has actually been kind of like a net positive. Because
and was it Elon that introduced
he
that?
Did. Yeah, he so, did. Like, you know that meme, the worst person you know makes a valid point. Like, listen, I think many things are that man, but like, I do think the community notes things is ultimately a good thing and a net positive, because I've seen several kind of tweets that otherwise would have gone unchecked and that kind of just been passed off as like fact. Actually, you'll read underneath and it's like, this is the truth, this is the truth, this is the truth, you know? So, like, that is, it's a good kind of, like, fact-checking thing.
I would say maybe if they are looking to do some kind of regulation, I think it should be that once a podcast is above a certain level of following, listenership, etc., because I think that's where it's going to actually make the most impact.
Influence,
the fact that Stephen Bartlett is, like, I think he's definitely in the top five, I would say, like, the Spotify Wrapped podcast of this year. So he's clearly, like, getting, people are listening and taking this on. Whereas, say us, for example, we are obviously growing, but like at the same time, I think we'd be less of a worry for regulation, because I don't think that a lot of people are taking what we say as gospel.
Even though they should.
in our opinion. But yeah, you get the point. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see what comes from that. Right. Staying on the topic. Actually, no, I'm going to go and change the camera. Be right back.
It's so cold in this room. Why is it so cold? Do they not have a heater in here? They've got like two fans and no heaters.
You know, I'm fine with that.
Carlos is... I was literally at Carlos's flat last week and your windows were open. It was literally like... It was the storm. It was when we had the storm. It was the first day of the storm. And I'm freezing to death. Goosebumps all over my arms. Carlos is there in a vest and shorts. Like, even today you're wearing shorts, Carlos. You're just... I don't understand it. You must be very, warm-blooded.
I think I am. I think I definitely am.
I'm very anemic. My body does not warm itself up. Even when, you know when I get cold, the cold, stays in my bones. The only way I can heat up after I've been out in the cold is to have a scalding hot shower.
Nah, I really don't like hot showers.
Oh, my God.
I think maybe I don't know if it's nature or nurture, but if it is nurture, growing up, we really didn't have the heating on very much. That wasn't by necessity. It was by choice of my parents. They just didn't put the heating on. It was actually always my dad that wanted to have the heating on. My mum was like, no, which makes sense when you think about it.
I was going to say, I think my family, we just always have the heating on. Even now, because we have an AC unit in my house, but it's also a heat, it heats as well. That is on full blast. Or 24/7, it's on full blast. We had no more radiators and electric radiators in every room growing up.
I just so much rather be I always say I don't want to be freezing, but I'd much rather be on the colder side and be able to put a jumper on, warm up, rather than be sitting in I think it's when the air is warm, it just really unsettles me. It doesn't vibe with me. Sorry. Sorry to say. But yeah, staying on the topic of disgraced public figures.
I wonder where this is going.
Greg Wallace.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, which obviously this is an ongoing investigation into allegations of inappropriate sexual comments. So I think we're just going to give more of the information on it rather than going into... whether or not he has or hasn't said this. So basically, Greg Wallace has been accused of making sexualized jokes and other inappropriate remarks towards a range of women dating back nearly two decades.
Oh my God.
At least 13 people have come forward publicly to accuse Wallace of inappropriate behavior, mainly sexualized jokes, often relating to his own or the other person's sex life, in inappropriate settings that have made people uncomfortable. He's had, since the first 13 set of allegations came out, more people have actually come forward as well, including one person who ghost wrote his memoir,
who said
that she was sexually harassed by him, saying that he answered the door wearing only a towel, which he later dropped, made revolting and sickening sexualized suggestions to her, and touched her inappropriately.
Oh my God.
There is also the fact that a number of complaints have been made about him in the past. It's now been shown from 2012, 2017, 2018, and 2022. So
what, that have just been ignored?
Well, I think I'm not sure what actually happened, but the point is that these complaints were made to the necessary people. I think he was given warnings or stuff
like
that.
Okay, but not a genuine consequence.
Yeah,
because he's still been on our TV shows.
Yeah, exactly. We've been unaware.
That's crazy.
But then I don't know if you saw, but after the first set of allegations came out, a couple of days afterwards, he went to his Instagram, and I've never seen a clearer definition of him.
Guilt.
Not that. Self-sabotage.
Really? Why? What did you do?
Guilt I can't comment on because I don't know, and that's for them to decide. But self-sabotage I can't, because he literally went on there and was basically saying it's 13 in over 4,000 MasterChef contestants that I've worked with over the years, and this is the particular bit that struck a bad chord with people. I can see the complaints coming from a handful of middle class women of a certain age, just from Celebrity MasterChef. This isn't right. And it's just what are
celebrities that are doing it?
He's saying celebrity. Yeah, and it is a number of like, what's it called? Public figures have said this as well.
Oh my God. You know what's so crazy is that he's like, well, 13 out of 4,000 isn't that much. In my head, I was thinking the opposite. I was like, wow, it's not just 1, 2, 3. It's 13 different.
Yeah, and the fact they're all the similar lane. Like,
right.
Like, come on.
But also, like, I think it's a very interesting comment that, he thinks that it discredits them, that it's just kind of been one demographic of women that are speaking out. But I think that says a lot about the kind of women that can afford to speak out, right? Like if these are, as he says, middle class women from kind of like, you know, from the celebrity world or whatever, they will naturally have certain levels of protection. You know, like maybe they can afford lawyers. Maybe they have a platform, they can speak out. Maybe, you know, they have a bit of influence, they have a bit of power. Can you imagine the kind of, if it was, for example, a working class contestant, like who doesn't have that level of, you know, power or money or influence.
Yeah.
You know, so just to say that it's 13, I don't think that necessarily means it's the end of it. Just to say that there's 13 people that have spoken out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And by the way, I was just shocked at the video because it's like, how can you have like recorded that and thought, upload.
Yeah.
There.
Yes, this will really, really vindicate me. This will prove my innocence.
And I think he was literally wearing like a sexually suggestive top when he did it as well.
But you know what that is? It is audacity, and it is because I don't think he's probably too fearful of the consequences if he's behaving like that on a public forum in the immediate aftermath of being accused of, you know, this many sexual allegation cases. I don't think he's very scared. He didn't seem to be very scared of the consequences, and I think that's because of the precedent that there is for men not necessarily having to face consequences of these things. You know, like we speak all the time about how many disgraced public figures there are who have been embroiled in scandal, and then like the next year they're on mainstream prime time television,
but like,
you know,
a washing machine kind of thing, like just like put it in, roll around and come out, and it's like, okay,
pristine again, like, you know, like and if he's seen that example and he knows that precedent exists, of course he's not breaking a sweat. There historically has not been much consequence or like very serious consequences to the point where someone has like lost their career. And also, like, if there have been, you know, you've said there have been a number of times where people have made complaints to like the relevant, you know, authority figures or whatever, and it seems like all he's done is received a slap on the wrist. Like, I think the first time, one time is enough, you know, in my opinion. But obviously, if you're a big, you know, television exec or whatever you want to say face, you might excuse him once or twice, but like the number of times that it's actually gone to people and they've been made aware of it and they're like covering him, of course he's not scared. This whole time, like, everyone's known and he's been protected. What does he have to be scared about?
Yeah.
He's almost like untouchable.
Yeah, well, he's obviously stepped down. I'm not sure if it was by choice from MasterChef. At least, and they've not airing episodes of him that have already been filmed over the Christmas period.
Is he the presenter or a judge?
A presenter. So have you ever watched MasterChef?
Yeah, I have. I do know him, but I can't remember if he was the judge or the presenter.
It's basically like, it's usually him and one other person that they basically just like kind of start off, walk around. They try out the
food and then
it goes to the judges who actually like
do it.
So he never really has, I don't think, any say in terms of what
it, no, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
The other grey-haired guy in it.
The bald guy.
He's the bald guy, Greg Wallace. Yeah, and then the other one is the grey-haired guy.
Yeah. I mean, I would be surprised if he was able to come back from this, but also,
I wouldn't be. Like, would you? I wouldn't be.
I think just because it's because of like we just said about the demographic of people that have been saying,
right?
This,
okay. Yeah. Yeah. Perhaps.
Like,
perhaps.
These are like notable figures.
Yeah.
Like, I think it makes it less likely than, say, if it was purely people that don't have any kind of public standing or following or whatever.
Yeah, no, that's true.
But yeah, it was just like his reaction to it. I was just like, yeah, not the one. Moving on to what you actually sent in the chat a couple of days ago.
What did I send?
Baroness. What's her name? Baroness Mayer. Can you remember this?
Baroness Mayer?
Yeah, her name is Mayer. Like Mayer.
Oh, What did I send?
Right.
I'll be scrolling on TikTok and Twitter and any interesting thing I come on with no explanation, I'll just send it onto the group chat. Like,
Baroness Mayer is, she forms part of the House of Lords, and she's facing.
Oh my God! Yeah, MP Pop.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
I have you. It's not MP Popperdom. It's Lord Popperdom.
Lord Popperdom. Okay. But, sorry. Yeah,
Conservative Baroness Mayer is facing a 3-week suspension from the House of Lords after an investigation found comments that she's made amounted to harassment related. Also, I've just realised related to race. They say related to race rather than
not racism. She literally called a man Lord Popperdom.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
She twice used the derogatory term Lord Popperdom to refer to.
Not once, but twice. Yeah, she said, in case you didn't hear me the first time, Lord Popperdom. Yeah, to refer That's to crazy.
Lord Dolakia. During a taxi ride, during a visit to Rwanda with Parliament's Joint Committee on Human Rights in February of this year, she initially denied using the term, but faced with evidence from two witnesses, she admitted...
She tried to lie her way out. This woman is shameless.
She admitted that she may have said it, blaming a long day and a dinner where she drank possibly 3 glasses of wine.
Oh my... Sorry, the racism just slipped out because I was drunk. No, it tends to happen when I drink.
No, not racism, harassment. Related to race. I'll have you know.
Carlos becomes a dancer when he drinks. This woman becomes a racist when she drinks. Like, hello, I don't think the alcohol is the problem here. That's crazy.
Also, 3 glasses of wine is not, let's be honest.
Like, I wouldn't know. I don't drink. The wrong person to comment on that.
No, I'm saying, like, no. If that's coming out after that, then.
That is insane. And also, like, a 3-week suspension. What? Is that the extent of her punishment?
Well, they've also recommended that she be made to take bespoke behaviour training. But
I just don't think, like, I don't... The thing is like, okay, this woman has said it not once but twice, and then she's denied it. And it's only in the presence of, like, what, witness evidence that she's been forced to admit it. She hasn't admitted it because, you know, any feeling of remorse or any kind of, you know, she's trying to take accountability or she realises what she's done is wrong. She has been forced to admit it only because she can't deny it anymore because there's other witnesses there. Can you imagine other things that this woman has said that either haven't been heard by the right, you know, by people who are going to go and snitch or, you know, or kind of that she's managed to deny or explain away?
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Like, someone who's going to make a comment like that, it's rarely a self-contained thing. It's rarely the end of it, you know? MC Papadom. Sorry, not MC. What? MC Papadom is a crazy DJ name. Lord Papadom is crazy. Lord Papadom is insane. To call a sitting MP Lord Papadom.
Not even, like...
Who was it?
Lord, to be part of the House of Lords.
Oh, my God. Wow. Lord Papadom is insane. Like, that... You know what that is? That is, like... That is the most, like, juvenile form of racism. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's, like... You're so racist that you can't even be bothered to, like, dress it up a little bit. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's, like... You know Come Fly With Me? The show Come Fly With Me? Like, that level of, like, early noughties, like, brazen racism. That's insane.
But it's the fact
that's not even like, oh, I'll move my bag a little bit when you come next to me, or like, I'll give you a little look, or like, I'll talk over you. That is like...
Dear me.
Insane.
But then it's also the fact that as part of this investigation, she also was accused of... You know the Labour MP, Dawn Ribeiro-Addy? She asked her if she could touch her braids.
Oh, that's and, I saw that.
Yeah, and then did so before receiving a reply. Ribeiro-Addy said that she laughed it off at the she laughed off the incident, but said it made her feel extremely uncomfortable.
But this is my point. Did I say, like, it's rarely self-contained?
Exactly.
Someone who makes comments like that in the company of other people, like, it's rarely the only, like, it's very, very rare that that's where it will end, you know? And and that's what I mean when I say, like, there's probably several other instances where she's done and said things that are, you know, what is it? Racially...
Harassment relating to race.
You know, and she's just either not been caught or she's just managed to somehow deny or explain it away. But the crazy thing is like, she is obviously kind of like a political figure with some level of political influence. And
well, yeah, House of Lords, that's like big.
The ultimate, like, yeah, exactly, of course. So like it's you know, like if she is making these comments in kind of I guess for her is it's a joke and it's
jovial
kind of joking kind of way, but that is obviously informed by some level of like bias and prejudice, and that will inevitably come out in the kind of policies and politics that she's involved with that will then go on to have like material impacts on, you know, people of color, South Asian people.
Yeah, so
people of the Papadom persuasion. Like, I just think it's insane, Lord Papadom.
Like how it is, like you said, like quite juvenile. Like you would expect
it's so
that.
So stupid, like, from like a kid.
Yeah, like an 8-year-old.
Like it's like she's not even bothered to make her racism a bit sophisticated. Like she's just.
I feel like if you're gonna be racist, at least be like clever with it.
You get what I'm saying? Like use some wit. You know, Papadom is insane.
But like you were saying, I think the fact that she's in this like majorly responsible position, like the highest of the high, and yet all that's happening is a 3-week suspension and some possible behavioural training. I'd say that I think it's also recommended training rather than actually she has to do this training.
Oh my god, not even compulsory.
This is what I mean. Like, I feel like if you were looking at this properly, you would be like, look, like, she is...
She shouldn't be a sitting...
Yeah, it should like, be put into question. Should she actually still be
in the House of Lords? Yeah, I know. Like, and also, like, I think it should probe further investigation.
Yeah.
Like, you need to find out if there's two examples of her making these, like, racially motivated, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like, there, as I say, there will be more. You guys need to do a full-on investigation, talk to her other peers, and find out, has she been making other comments? You know, like, do your due diligence. But, of course, they're not going to do that because they're just trying to, like, minimise impact, you know. But, once again, it's another example of, kind of, like, white people being able to, kind of, make whatever... comment or harmful, commit whatever harmful behaviours and then still being protected under, like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sigh. Well, moving on to people making bad comments. Simran actually sent me something earlier this week, which was relating to Kyle Walker, the footballer. I don't know if you know who Kyle Walker is. No. Well, Kyle Walker is a football player. He plays for England and Man City. I also don't know if you know this because you don't keep up with football, but Man City are having a tough time at the moment. They're not doing very well, which is obviously bad because they literally have been on top for like the past couple of years and they're going through a really bad spell. But they lost recently 2-0 to Juventus in the Champions League. And following this, Kyle Walker... who's of Jamaican heritage, he received like an onslaught of racial hate on Instagram.
And oh, where have we seen this before? This is so new, so unexpected from the British public. Oh, I'm shocked.
But I think it's more the fact that, like, in the 4 years that we've been doing this, we've, like, spoken
about this topic
like,
several
a number
times.
Of times, and it's like, it just doesn't seem to change. And he actually took to Instagram because that's where it's happening. And he posted his story saying that Instagram and the authorities need to stop this happening. No one should be subject to the sort of vile, racist and threatening abuse I've received online since last night's match. They need to stop this happening for the sake of all who are suffering this abuse. It is never acceptable. To our fans, we will continue to work as a team to do better, to improve and to turn the corner together.
Yeah.
And...
Go on.
No, so go on, you give your comment on this.
I was just going to say, like, I think that more just needs to be done on all fronts. Obviously, like, Kyle Walker, he's called out, like, Instagram and the authorities, but I think also from, like, the football teams and, like, the football federations. I know, like, FIFA do, like, kind of anti-racism campaigns and give racism the red card, like, all of that is very nice, but like if someone's racist they're not going to be like, oh my god, they said give racism the red card, I won't be racist anymore. There needs to be material consequences. Do you know what I mean?
More like if you know who's doing this, then give them
ban them. That's my point. I think that if reports come in and you find someone's identity through social media or someone's made a comment or whatever and someone's reported it, I think they need to start banning people from stadiums, from, you know, football games, from what, like, they need to, that's what they need. That's what needs to be the consequence. Yeah. Otherwise, people aren't going to stop. Like a nice fluffy campaign, like give racism the red card. Like that's not going to stop someone from being racist if that's what's in their heart.
Yeah.
You know, the only way they need to be scared, make racists scared again. That's what needs to be the slogan.
What's that? MRSA.
Maybe not that. We could just say it in full. Make racists scared again. MRSA, that's heavy.
Oh, dear.
But anyways, yeah, there needs to be consequences. There needs to be material consequences. If you want to be racist, you are not allowed. You can't come and watch the boys play. You know, that's what needs to be the consequence.
Sorry, I'm still stuck on MRSA. That was so unfortunate.
It is very unfortunate. We don't recommend that as a slogan.
No. But what you said is like very correct. But I also just wanted to take this opportunity to actually say, even though Instagram, if you're listening, please don't shadow ban us, because that, some of my content has been doing very well recently. But yeah, I think Instagram really can do more. And the reason why I say this is because just this week, in my other job, there has been something that I posted and it did attract the attention of trolls.
Ugh.
And it was actually just, first of all, it was impossible to monitor. And second of all, it's just like, it goes without saying that the stuff these people were saying was bad, right? But it's also the fact that there's no means on Instagram to actually properly monitor it. Like, I think you can hold comments that have certain words in, or you can just turn the comments off completely. But yeah, one thing that's better about TikTok, actually.
I was going to say this, because you know what? Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, I do stay away from, like, the Mango Masala platforms, like, because sometimes people be commenting crud, and, like, sometimes I want to message back. And there have been times where I've messaged back using expletives. And why is it that Steve from Colchester can be racist towards me, but I can't tell him to beep, beep, beep? It's my comment that gets deleted or flagged. That's not right.
MRSA. right, but the point I was making is that TikTok actually has a function, right? Because obviously I know from our content, where if...
Yeah, there's been enough times I've tried to cuss people out and my comment gets deleted.
Yeah, because if TikTok detects something that is like obviously bad, it will hold it, and then I have the option to like allow it or not, kind of thing.
For
a lot of it, that it does do that quite effectively. So I don't know why Instagram doesn't do that, because the problem that I had with this post was that the stuff people were commenting, it just wasn't getting flagged.
I feel like my stuff gets flagged even when I say that. I remember, like, there was one video I put on TikTok and someone commented like a sarcastic comment, and I replied, and this is a complete stranger, and I replied, and I wasn't even swearing, but I replied back saying something about their dad and that got deleted. Like, TikTok is picking on me. They've got a vendetta against me. You need to be focusing on these racists. That's what you need to be doing.
MRSA.
Not too much on me now, okay? But yeah, Instagram, you need to start regulating racist comments on your platform.
Mark Zuckerberg, do better.
Do better.
MRSA.
Make racists scared again. And football clubs and FIFA and what else do we have here? Champions League. You gotta start banning some people. Have some integrity, okay? It's not always about the money. It's not always about the ticket sales. You need to start banning people who are known racists.
No, I'm sorry, I'm not gonna be funny.
Protect your players.
I'm not gonna be funny, but if banning racists affects your ticket sales that much, then I think that's very concerning.
That's exactly the problem. You're letting racist people into your stadium and you're putting your players up to that kind of racist abuse.
Yeah.
You're literally weeding out the problem. It's a win-win.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Right, on to the final topic of today. I'm surprised that we've never talked about this in the past 4 years.
Oh, yeah.
It's not what you think.
Oh, okay.
I'm saving that. I'll explain later that.
Okay.
But this is Band-Aid.
Oh, my. We have spoke about it.
Have we gone into depth about it? We have.
Yeah, because I remember going off about, but have you seen Fuse ODG?
This is exactly
okay,
what I'm
yeah.
So obviously everyone, if you're British, you probably have heard the Band-Aid Do They Know It's Christmas song, or some variation of it. It's been remade a couple of times.
With like new celebrities every time.
For context, because obviously the initial track came out in 1984, initially it was a charity single that was put together.
We spoke about it. I remember we have, because we went through the lyrics.
Yeah. Well,
and we were like...
Well, we're going to do it again.
Yeah.
It was put together in 1984 in light of famine that was happening in Ethiopia. And again, I'm not going to go through the lyrics in total, but I think the chorus that stands out the most is, and there won't be snow in Africa this Christmas time.
So like, well, yeah, because that's not the climate for snow. What are you trying to say?
The greatest gift they'll get this year is life. Where nothing ever grows,
no rain or
rivers flow.
So you lot colonized Africa for what then? For what? Like, for what resources?
Do they know it's Christmas time at all? I know what the
Feed the world.
Wait, do you
it's
know
insane.
What the funniest thing is that Ethiopia is actually home to one of the oldest Christian communities in the world.
Oh my God.
Also, the thing that I realized like this time round was that the whole time we're talking about Africa. Why are we not referring... If it was made for Ethiopia, why is that not... Why
no,
are we
and then
Africa
they start saying,
continent?
Feed the world. Mm. Like, it goes from Ethiopia to Africa to now let's feed the world. Like, it's so stupid. It is the most paternalistic, the most patronising, the most racist song I've ever heard. Like, that is a sophisticated level of racism.
I think, I think if we're going to give some credit where it's due, I do think that probably this song was made with good intentions, right? It was made with the idea that they're going to raise money for this famine.
But I feel like in this situation, like, the good intentions don't count because it's the whole thing of, like, the white man's burden. Mm. You know, it's this whole kind of concept of how, like, white people in the West go and do charities in, you know, the third world, and because they have this idea that, oh my God, I'm so privileged and they're just so they're just so awful and they're just so destitute, I must go and help them. It's my moral obligation to lift these people out of poverty and let them know that it's Christmas. You know, like, they're all living under a rock. The entire continent of Africa is under one massive boulder.
How can they not celebrate Christmas?
It's insane. It's crazy. Like, the lyrics as well. Like,
No. The songs... I think the original sentiment, whilst everything that you've said is
correct. Yeah, of course, I get it. It was for charity, ultimately. Yes, cool. But it's like, it's perpetuating very, very awful narratives. Firstly, like, you're essentializing an entire continent. That's 54 countries, guys. Like, people do this thing with Africa in particular. They'll just refer to it as Africa. Do you understand there's 54 countries in that continent?
And like,
do you get it?
Also, like, I think people very much think of people who are quote-unquote African as be looking a very particular way.
Well, yeah, they think Africa's like, an entire dirt road.
Exactly.
Like, with shanty towns and, like, mud houses.
Like,
and
people with, like...
Ripped clothes.
Yeah, and, like, looking a very particular, like, style and, like, skin colour and everything. But it's actually so varied as well
in terms of
Africa, like...
Of course. Yeah. But that's what I mean. Like, it's so patronising. It's so patronising. Like, just read the lyrics. Like, we need to let them know it's Christmas. Like, it's. Do you know the stronghold that Christianity has across Africa for you to be the one to go and tell them, hey guys, it's Christmas, just to let you know? It's insane. Like, if you want to do charity, you want to do a charitable endeavor, like, do it, but without the false pretentiousness, you know, without the whole white man's burden and, you know, like, you kind of white man savior complex. That's what it is. It's a savior complex. Are we recording? Carlos is just fixing the screen for those of you who aren't. Yeah, for me, I think the big thing is it's the white savior complex, you know, like that's a really problematic thing. Like, do charity by all means. Like, no one is, charity is a good thing, but not always inherently so. You know, when the narrative that kind of, you know, perpetuated here is that Africa is a one big shantytown.
And this is particularly what Fuse ODG has had to say about this. And I think he was initially invited to take part in the 2014 version, which was being done in light of the Ebola crisis that was happening at that time.
Wait, do you know what's crazy to me before we go into that? Sorry. Sure. Do you know what's crazy to me is that, as Carlos said, the original song, when was it? Like in the 80s, 90s?
1984.
Yeah, so like in the 80s. Maybe at that point, I could kind of excuse the kind of level of ignorance. Like, you know, people weren't very politically aware. They, you know, they were a lot more ignorant, yeah? Cool, the world was a lot smaller back in those days. The fact that that song has been remade, like,
up until
this point with celebrities of this day and age. And I saw an interview the other day on TikTok about some, I can't remember who the celebrities were. There was like a few celebrities who were making it, like this recent remake, they were in it. And they were sat there and they were completely earnestly talking about how this is a great thing. And they were like, yeah, it means so much and it's so iconic and it's so great. We're doing such a good thing. And I'm like, you lot have come so far. We are 30 years into the 40 years into the, you know, from literally 40 years from when that song first came out. And no one still has the sense to know that, hey, the world has changed. No, and like,
this conversation comes up every time as well. Like, even
exactly,
even
exactly.
10 years ago, I remember, like, and literally when I was also researching this ahead of today, a BBC article from 2014 came up, which is like, why is the song so controversial, and explaining
right,
it.
Like, exactly.
People have been talking,
you are
about
privy
this.
To these conversations. You are literally seeing, you know, African people come forward and be like, this song is nonsense, it's insulting, it's offensive, it's patronizing. And still you have the audacity to go on national television and talk about how this is a great thing.
Yeah. So Fuse ODG was initially invited to take part in the 2014 one. He declined. And I think in light of this recent remake, which also this recent remake, I don't think anyone's actually recording anything new. All that they're doing, which I think because they've realised that actually no one's going to actually sing this anymore, that it's an amalgamation of people from the different years. So they're just making big mashup version. That's why.
For what reason?
Exactly, because it's the 40th anniversary. That's why.
Oh my god.
But Fuse ODG has like come forward to express his distaste with it, saying, "It's been touching seeing the efforts that were put into it initially, the British public and different celebrities coming together to support a good cause because there was a crisis at a time they needed attending to. I have no problem with that. But in that act of kindness, in that process of trying to help a crisis, we created another identity crisis."
Yeah, absolutely.
"As a child who's now grown up in this era of images like that, Band-Aid and initiatives like it have put Africa as a place of famine, a place of poverty, disease-filled. It took away our collective sense of pride and identity. So in the middle of trying to solve a temporary crisis, we've caused another dangerous crisis, which is an identity crisis for the whole continent."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Great. I think as well, like, he was being asked, like, I think one of the lyrics in the song is about, like, oh, there's no peace or joy or something. He was like, "I literally go to Ghana every year to find peace and joy."
Yeah, literally. Literally. I was talking to my friend today who's literally flown out to Ghana. And, like, these lot, like, it's insane. Like, but that's exactly what I'm saying. Like, it is absolutely an image problem, right? It is an image problem because it's, like, it's 2024, 40 years from when that song first came out. And you are still talking about Africa as... And by the way, like, in 40 years, like, various countries within the continent have massively... Because, okay, yes, generally it does exist in the global south, right? But various countries within the continent have excelled, you know, economically, politically, socially, like, you know, they are doing so well, you know, and so many countries now are still, and by the way, like, All of this is devoid of the context of why Africa was destitute in the first place.
Mm.
Slavery and colonization, like, you know, it's all that, all of that is even missing in the first place. But the point is that, like, you know, a number of African countries have done a great job of, like, really kind of, like, rising from the ashes of, like, colonialism and slavery and all of these things. And to this day, are still kind of fighting that battle of, like, neo-colonialism, you know? And there's never any conversation about that. There's never any conversation about how well the economy might be doing or how well certain countries have stabilized their workforces and things like that. It's always this same rhetoric 40 years on about how, as I say, Africa is this one big disease, poverty-riddled continent collectively.
I think it's especially interesting in today's day and age, because I think over the past 10 years since the last one, I would say that musically, Afrobeats and on the piano have become very much like ingrained,
huge international success. Cultural, like, exports.
And that's not to say that they didn't exist before, but I'm saying in terms of being appreciated by the
globally,
world.
Absolutely.
And so we're at this stage, and yet still
they're still not getting their flowers. It's crazy, but it's actually a lot more insidious than just like, oh, it's a song and it's patronizing, because it's like the more this image and this narrative about Africa as a continent is kind of like perpetuated, it does actually impact their, you know, self-actualizations as like nations, and also kind of like their diplomatic relations, their trade relations. Like, if this is how people across the world think about Africa, like they're always going to kind of be touching it with a 10-foot barge pole, you know, like. And African people as well. You know, now when you come across African people, you're always going to be thinking, like, you are just,
it's like, no matter what you think, if you've grown up on that song, like, in the back of your head, there is going to be, like,
you see an African person and be like, oh my God, have they got shoes on? You know, have their clothes got holes in it? It's ridiculous.
I think as well, particularly, like, because that song, you sing Christmas songs at school and stuff, isn't it? And it's like kind of ingrained. The fact that we used to sing that in school and stuff.
Yeah. Like, as a kid, you don't actually realize how problematic it is. But like, 100%, that passively that creates an image of Africa in your head. Like, if you go to a kid now and you ask them, what do you think about Africa as a continent? Probably what they will say is that, oh, it's poor and there's loads of diseases there and there's a lot of famine and there's poverty and all of these things. You know, they're not taught anything about the kind of the rich history and culture and heritage and, you know, economic booms and whatever, like.
I still can't. I just
go put that song in the bin, like, leave it in the archives.
Yeah, or make a version of the song that isn't about that, or something that's just like nice Christmas songs to actually sing. Because ultimately, like, having obviously grown up in it, I do like the song as itself, like the way it sounds. Like, it doesn't sound bad, it's just the lyrics that are the problem.
And you know what it is? It's like, this is what, again, like, white savior complex. You're singing for, like, Africa. Meanwhile, the children in your own country are going to food banks.
That's exactly
meanwhile,
what
Meanwhile, the nurses
said.
in your own country are eating off of food banks. The child poverty is on the rise in your own country. My friend, focus on that.
That's literally what Fuse of the G said in his interview. It's like, just, there are also starving children here. Like,
yeah, by the way. Awful.
Oh dear. But yeah,
that's stuck in my head now, the song.
It's the same. Make our own version of it.
Yeah,
maybe it can be the theme tune for MRSA.
Oh, for God's sake.
Right, on that note, let's sign off. Thank you everyone for tuning in to today's episode. We'll be back next week for our final episode of the year.
Oh my God.
Come around very quickly. But
too quickly.
Very quickly. 2025. In 15 odd days, Halima will say next year we're 30.
Carlos!
And on that bombshell.
Oh my God!
Bye.
Oh, bye, guys.